Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, and welcome to Gayers on Film. This podcast is where we, a pair of gayers, talk about what we're watching. I'm Declan.
And I'm Ned.
And in this episode, we'll be discussing Dan Levy's directorial debut, Good Grief. Remember, there will be spoilers once we get to the headline feature, so as always, do proceed with caution. But before we get to that, I'm dying to know what you've been watching recently, King. And how was your holiday?
My holiday was lovely, actually. Oh my God. You know that book I read? Song of Achilles.
Yeah.
So, for listeners who are unfamiliar, it came out in 2012, I think, and is a little bit of a sort of Greek mythology queer love story. Gorgeous. Mm. But I've just had the thought, as we were like setting up to record, this is what I meant when I said I want to see more kind of period pieces about queer love. So if anybody, burgeoning filmmakers out there listening to this podcast,
I was Googling to see
wants to pick it up,
if it had been optioned for anything, but I don't think it has.
No, I think it'd be really good. And apparently the book won the Women's Prize the year it was published.
Is that like a prize for female authors?
I assume so.
Yeah.
I think it's a literary one.
Yes. I love that word. Literary.
That's nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
But yes, that was my holiday reading, but this is a film podcast, so I'll talk about what we've watched. Mm. Quite long flights to Mexico, so plenty of time for films.
Well, was there?
In theory.
Yeah.
It was a bit turbulent, and it was filling me with dread and terror, so I opted for kids' films.
It took me so long. In a 10.5-hour flight during the day where I didn't sleep much, I watched two films. Due to how turbulent it was, because I had to keep pausing my first film because I was like, I can't concentrate at all. So, yeah.
Yeah. So the kids' films on available that I chose were Frozen, classic, really enjoyed, still enjoyed. After, I think it was good that I've not seen it for a few years and nobody is incessantly playing Let It Go anymore. Because it did start to grate on me a bit at the time. But, it's definitely worthy of its place in history. The Lego Movie, which I'd never seen before. And I remember that. Was that nominated or winner of a few awards the year it came out?
It was definitely nominated, I think.
Yeah.
Because I think it shocked everyone, because everyone was like, how good can a Lego film be? And it was actually quite good.
It was good. Yeah. Because they performed the Everything Is Awesome song.
At the Oscars?
At some award show. I can't remember exactly which. But I do remember seeing it. I also watched Mummies, which I think came out last year. Animated.
Oh, this year? No, can't it be. Yeah,
it was definitely. This year.
Chewie wouldn't have it if it literally came out this year.
It came out in 2023.
Yeah.
It was quite fun. Very family watching. Can't really remember much about the story, but I'm not sure if that was anything to do with the quality of the film or whether I was too distracted by the terror of being 40,000 feet in the air.
So silly.
So there was that. Also watched Where the Wild Things Are, which I think I remember the book coming out as a child. And it was really adorable, actually. Kind of quite emotionally mature for a kids' film. And one that I would recommend to anyone who fancies kind of a bit of a chill, not too much by way of story, but a lot by way of meaning type film. I would say Where the Wild Things Are is a good place to start. What else do I watch?
Just loads of Disney bands.
Loads of Disney. Alice in Wonderland, the remake, which I was hoping would put me to sleep because it was used to, because I'd seen it that many times. But I don't think it did. Or it might have done. Anyway. really enjoy that one. What's the lead actress called? Mia. Name begins with W.
Doesn't matter.
Really good one, though. I enjoyed that. I don't think I ever got around to seeing the second.
Awful.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay,
I didn't really rate the first one either.
Oh, I like it. Maybe I just got, like, because it was one that I watched quite a lot when I was younger. Maybe I just got happy memories attached. I don't know. Beauty and the Beast remake with, I was going to say Hermione Granger then, Emma Watson.
That's one of my favourite remakes, actually. I actually think that one's quite good.
Yeah, I actually, when it came out, I think I might have been influenced by general public criticism and not enjoyed it as much. But this time, I actually had quite a good time watching it. I think there's...
For
the remakes, it is a good one. Up there
with one of the best ones that they've done. Yeah.
Which, you know, isn't necessarily saying much.
No, but...
But, yeah, it's one of the better ones. And yesterday afternoon, I think it was, I watched... No, day before. Sunday afternoon, I watched Aristocats. Ah,
cute.
Yeah, cute. Disney Plus has done a thing, and there's like a...
Is there like a warning?
There's like a... Almost a disclaimer, I guess, at the start of Aristocats saying about how some of the things kind of maybe aren't so culturally acceptable anymore, but rather than remove...
I've heard they've done that. And I think they do it about tobacco as well.
But I was watching Aristocats, looking out for this, and I really couldn't... I wasn't sure what was...
Problematic. I can't remember. I haven't watched it in that long.
No.
Oh, well. Are you not mentioning Theatre Camp?
Oh, is that long ago? I can't remember.
But it is. Theatre I will Camp. Just say it about it if you want. It's on Disney Plus. It's 90 minutes, and it's a really fun comedy.
It's so funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really silly, but like... Not stupid silly, just fun silly.
Yeah, I gave it 3.5. I think if you're into musicals as well and not taking yourself too seriously about how much you're into musicals, it's quite a funny one.
Yeah.
There was some line about Liza Minnelli which I wish I could remember.
Oh, I know. There were a lot of kind of cracking one-liners in there. Yes, would recommend.
Okay.
What have you watched else?
So on plane films for me, I'm not sure if the turbulence reflected this one, but I watched, you know, the Haunted Mansion film that came out last year that weirdly...
Is it a remake?
Well, there was a Haunted Mansion film before with Eddie Murphy, but I wouldn't really say it's a remake. It's just, a different
film called Haunted Mansion. Right. Yeah.
So, it was pretty bad.
Was it?
Yeah, I give it 1.5 star. I thought it was really boring. Not scary enough, not funny enough, a bit of a pointless story. I thought the actors were doing the best because it does have quite a decent cast, but it was just not very good. And I think Disney trying to use another one of their rides to try to create another franchise similar to the likes of, I don't know, Pirates of the Caribbean.
Mm.
Certainly, I don't think we'll be getting anything. Even Tiffany Haddish wasn't funny, and I find her really funny.
She is really funny. That's a shame.
So, yeah.
You know a film's not funny when...
They make funny people.
Notably comedic people aren't funny in it.
And, like, Danny DeVito's in it as well. It was really, like, a really good cast, but, yeah.
That's a shame.
Not good for me. It's on Disney Plus if anyone wants to watch it, but I wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah.
I've also had my eye on this film for a while, like a French version of The Three Musketeers. And this is part one called D'Artagnan. Really, really good kind of epic adventure. It's a French film, mostly...
Is it Eva Green?
Eva Green is in it, yeah. She's obviously... She's not one of the Musketeers,
I think we ought to mention it's not a French version of The Three Musketeers. The Three Musketeers is a French story.
Is it?
Yeah.
Pretty sure it is. That makes sense.
Unless I've made that up, I'm pretty sure it's French.
Yeah, so there's part one and then part two recently came out. And when I saw two, he had this. I was like, oh, I'm going to watch part one. Ah. And then I'll catch up on part two at some point.
Is part two another name of one of the three? Because D'Artagnan's one of the three, isn't he? Is he?
The second one is called Milady.
Oh, okay.
Which is Ava Green's character. So,
oh.
Yeah, it's just a really good kind of... You know, it's got really good action, and it only cost €36 million, $40 million to make. And I think it when it went on Netflix or something, it was like it's featured on the top 10 of the most watched non-English speaking language films on Netflix.
Cool.
People loved it all over the world. Apparently, it's got 98% on Rotten Tomatoes, and I give it 3.5. And I think if I wasn't watching it on a
tiny screen.
8-inch, 9-inch screen that Tui have, and I was watching it at home or in the cinema, I'd have probably pushed to 4, but I think that's a good way of saying that the cinematic experience does kind of help films
do well.
Do well.
Yeah.
So, yes. And then on the way back, I watched 42, which is a biographical...
42 films!
A biographical sports film about the baseball player Jackie Robinson, played by... Chadwick Boseman. This was a list. This kind of got added to my watch list when, unfortunately, Chadwick Boseman died. And I wanted to go back and look at some of his kind of earlier films before or around the time he did Black Panther. So I had kind of... there's another couple that I've got to watch. But it was a really good sports film. It kind of touched on, you know, quite a lot of the similar themes of racism in film and... Jim Crow America and all that kind of stuff. And it also said it was interesting. It kind of starts with, you know, all these people have just come back because it's set not long after World War II, just come back from World War II, having fought for a country where a lot of the people in the country hate them.
Yeah.
So it had all that, and it was just, yeah, it was really good. I really enjoyed it. I think I gave that 3.5 star as well. And again, Chadwick Boseman, it's, you know, so sad that we lost him so young, because he's a great actor. Harrison Ford's in this as like the second lead, and I wouldn't say I enjoyed his performance that much, but it reminded me a little bit of the performance of, and they're not really similar in character, but just Tom Hanks in Elvis,
which
I didn't really get along with, like that kind of manager pushing the story kind of, but I didn't really like it.
Yeah.
And I also finished Marvel's second season of What If, their animated show, which is, as it says on the tin, like, multiversal stories. What if something happened instead of... What if something else happened that wasn't instead in the film? Yeah. So there was some really good episodes. There was this What If Happy Hogan Saved Christmas, which was like a bit of a Die Hard riff episode. I really enjoyed another one called What If Gahori Reshaped the World. It's all about the Tesseract and set in pre-colonial America. And basically it's got like Native Americans. I was just a bit worried I was going to use the wrong term there. But all like this Native American superhero that we haven't seen in live action when like the Spanish conquistadors come over and all that kind of stuff. It was really cool. And then I really liked this What If the Avengers Assembled in 1602, set in Shakespearean times, which was quite fun. So I actually would say overall I did enjoy that season more than the first.
Oh, I quite enjoyed the first season, so maybe I'll make a bit of effort with this one.
I'm sure you will. But I think that's everything on my list.
Great. Well, what's been going on in the news while we've been away?
So we had BAFTA noms whilst we were away, and hot off the press today, we've had Oscar noms. So I was just going to talk about BAFTA, but I thought let's just talk about both of them.
Go for it.
Now, BAFTA is always a bit different because obviously it's got that British angle, so we do tend to award some different films to maybe what some of the European, to what some of the American awards shows are looking at.
Yeah.
One that seems to get a bit more love in the UK was Saltburn with 5 nominations.
Ooh.
Whereas I don't think Saltburn got a single Oscar nomination, which I thought was quite interesting.
That is interesting.
There are some horrendous, for me personally, omissions from the BAFTAs first, and then some of them do carry over to the, ooh, the Oscars okay. as well.
Go on, tell me about them.
Lily Gladstone was not nominated for Best Actress for Killers of the Flower Moon at the BAFTAs, which I thought
that's
she's been in the running travesty. For everything else,
yeah,
and she's won others as well.
That is a travesty,
and totally just she won for a Golden Globe the week before, so yeah. It's like the fact that she wasn't even nominated to me was absolutely crazy. And like, don't get me wrong, the other actresses in there for the for the BAFTAs are all amazing as well, but there's it just felt weird that she wasn't in there. There's one for The Colour Purple, which I can't comment because I've not seen it. And also, which is nice to see, Vivian Opera for Rye Lane. So there's a few ooh. Kind of more British-y type films that have crept into the BAFTAs, which you would expect.
Yeah.
Rye Lane has got 2 nominations.
Rye Lane was fab.
How to Have Sex got 3. And I'm not sure, maybe she has been... Maybe that's slightly skewed because they've got that Rising Star Award at the BAFTAs, which is always
yeah.
And Mia McKenna Bruce, who is one of the actresses who was in that, is in there.
Okay.
I will talk about that more in a second. There's also some others. So Killers of the Flower Moon did get 9 nominations, but Leonardo DiCaprio also didn't get a nomination, but I'm actually quite all right with that. I think he was great, but... Yeah. Best director was interesting. Martin Scorsese, not included. Greta Gerwig, not included.
Okay.
And Yorgos Lanthimos for Poor Things, not included, which
so
I
who
thought.
Was included?
So best director in the BAFTAs, Bradley Cooper for Maestro, Jonathan Glazer for the Zone of Interest, which I'm looking forward to seeing.
Yes.
Andrew Haig for All of Us Strangers.
Okay.
Christopher Nolan for Oppenheimer.
Right.
Alexander Payne for The Holdovers. So, like, some of these I'm like, absolutely, okay, yeah. And Justine Triet for Anatomy of a Fall, which you've seen.
I think all of the ones I've seen of those are perfectly justified, to be honest.
So...
But I do wonder where some of those other ones you mentioned are.
I think what's going to happen... I thought Poor Things or Past Lives was going to really... kind of be the top films for not this awards cycle. But I have a feeling that Oppenheimer's been nominated for a lot, and I have a feeling it could win quite a lot as well, which is interesting to me because it's an amazing film, and it might just be that people think, oh, we should maybe give Chris Nolan the recognition he deserves for all of his films in a way, because I would say, like, Oppenheimer is probably the pinnacle of where... like his storytelling and his filmmaking, like it was like a perfect film for him to do. But yeah, Barry Keoghan for a BAFTA for Saltburn. Or another one, which...
I thought he said... Oh no, he said Saltburn didn't get any Oscars.
Yeah. And Rosamund Pike as well for Saltburn.
Oh, fab.
And what else was Saltburn nominated for? I can't remember. Just really an interesting mix. Napoleon got a few noms, but more kind of in the BAFTAs, but more kind of
production-y
type stuff, which is fair. But yeah, let's just talk quickly about the EE Rising Star, which has kind of awarded some amazing actors in the past, including Ava Green, who we were talking about before.
Lovely.
Last year it was won by Emma McKay.
Sex I say Mackie, but I could be
Mackie,
wrong.
Mackie, yeah. Sex Education / Barbie now. But this year the nominations go to Phoebe Deneva, the one from Bridgerton.
I didn't enjoy Bridgerton. I don't know which one Phoebe.
You don't. She's is she the one who's like Sophie Webster's daughter in real life or something?
Who's Sophie Webster?
From Coronation Street. The actor that plays her. Yeah, she is. And she's previously done, like, Waterloo Road and all those kind of British things, but now she's gone on to Bridgerton, and she's been in Bank of Dave, she was apparently in, which I think you watched.
Oh, I love Bank of Dave.
Ayo Edebiri, who I am fucking obsessed with.
I had never heard of Ayo Edebiri before late last year, and every single time I see her, I'm like, yes, I'm glad you're back.
Well, she's obviously broke out from The Bear, primarily, but also the likes of Theatre Camp, Bottoms. She's had a voice role in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Mutant Mayhem, and she's done a few other bits, and she's just absolutely flying and going places.
Yeah.
Jacob Elordi's in there, who is absolutely in just everything at the minute. Coming up, he's in... What else is he? I saw that he's going to be in, he's took Andrew Garfield's place in Guillermo del Toro's Frankenstein film, and loads. He just seems like he's everywhere at the minute. He's not in Masters of the Air. No, that's Barry Keoghan.
That's Barry Keoghan. Oh, that's one I want to see, actually, Masters of the Air. Did you say it's TV?
Yeah.
And what did you say it's on? Apple?
Apple, yeah.
Yes.
We've got Mia McKenna-Bruce from How to Have Sex, who was just amazing in that film that I saw at Leeds Film Festival this year. And then Sophie Wilde, who I don't even know what she's from. Talk to Me?
I remember enjoying Talk to Me.
Was she the main actor in Talk to Me? Yeah. So she's a rising star. I always like them because some amazing people have won that in the past. We're talking like Letitia Wright, Daniel Coyula, Tom Holland, John Boyega, Juno Temple, Kristen Stewart. Like, yeah. So let's just quickly move to Oscars. A very, very male best director about Justine Trett again for... There's one that I'm really sad that aren't in both Best Director and Best Actress on this, and I'm absolutely kind of so shocked.
What?
Celine Song for Past Lives isn't in Director. And Greta Lee isn't nominated for Best Actress, which I just think is deplorable.
What is wrong this year?
I know. It's in Best Picture, but Best Picture has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10... films in Best Picture, they allow a lot more. Oh. Whereas in Director and Actress and everything else, they end up they only whittle it down to five. So there are always going to be some omissions. But let's just do Best Picture. So we've got American Fiction, which we've not seen yet. Anatomy of a Fall, you've seen.
Fantastic.
Barbie.
Fantastic.
The Holdovers.
Fantastic.
Killers of the Flower Moon.
Oh, fantastic.
Maestro, we've not seen it yet. Oppenheimer.
Fantastic.
Past Lives.
Oh, Poor very Things. Fantastic.
And
very
The Zone fantastic. Of Interest, which we've not seen yet.
I do want to see Zone of Interest.
So do I, very much.
It's the World War II one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, there's one that I would like, in Best Supporting Actress, one that I would love to shout out, which I'm very, very happy to see. America Ferrera for Barbie.
Fantastic.
But what's quite weird, and I thought this might happen, Greta Gerwig didn't get a nom for Best Director, right?
Mm-hmm.
Margot Robbie didn't get a nom for Best Actress, but Ryan Gosling got a nom for Best Supporting Actor in Barbie, which is hilarious because that's kind of what the full Barbie film is about.
That is... so funny. In the most infuriating way.
Yeah. Past Lives did get a Best Original Screenplay, and Celine Song did write the screenplay as well as direct it, so she is in there a bit, but
okay.
I was a bit shocked. And also, interesting to see Best Animated Feature, The Boy and the Heron, Elemental, Nimona, which was a queer one that went on Netflix, which I'd like to catch up on.
Yeah.
Robot Dreams, never even heard of it.
No.
And then Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, which was always going to be a shoo-in. Cool. But again, like, not every Disney Wish isn't in there. What else came out? Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, people were shocked at that wasn't there. What else have we got that's a bit of a shock? So there's a film, Iron Claw, which people are raving about with Zac Efron. Thought Zac Efron might get a nom, but nothing.
Is that the wrestling one?
Yeah. But yeah, overall, Past Lives only got 2 Oscar nominations.
That is an absolute scandal.
Mortified, especially as it was our film of the year.
Yeah.
We're obviously not Oscar-y people. But again, Oppenheimer got 13. Poor Things got 11. So there was some facts about... For this year's acting nominees, a record number of LGBTQ plus characters were amongst the performances nominated, with a total of 6, including nominations for 3 openly LGBT actors in these roles.
So are we talking across the Oscars or the BAFTAs? Oscars.
Oscars.
So of all of the nominations...
So for the...
6.
For the 20... acting nominations.
6 are for queer characters. So that's over a quarter.
And 3 of them are actually gay actors as well.
Fantastic.
I'm not sure.
That's my word of this episode, fantastic.
And another interesting fact, Danielle Brooks is nominated for The Colour Purple.
Mm.
And she's the 2nd actor nominated to play that exact same role.
Right.
After Oprah Winfrey's Oscar-nominated performance in the 1985 original.
Oh, how wonderful.
So BAFTAs are on next month, I think. Sunday the 18th, which yeah. I always watch them live because it's UK time. And then Oscars are on Sunday the 10th of March, but that'll go into Monday the 11th. Oh, I wanted to see what songs are actually in Best Original Song, because they normally get, like, performed live. The Fire Inside from Flaming Hot. Never even heard of that. And Just Ken from Barbie. It Never Went Away from American Symphony. A Song for My People from Killers of the Flower Moon. And What Was I Made For from Barbie. So...
A
couple of Barbie on. No Dua Lipa, though.
No Dua Lipa.
So that was quite a long-winded news section, but it is quite a big news week for some of these awards that are coming out. But that's everything.
Lovely. What do we do next?
Being on holiday, we're a bit out of practice, aren't we?
Well, what a time we've had. But now it's time to cast our minds into the future and get excited for what's coming up in the world of film and TV. It's time now for Trailer, Trash or Treasure. What do we have this time?
We've got Back to Black, the Amy Winehouse biopic, which fantastic. I remember seeing that it was going to be a thing, and then all of a sudden the trailer's out, so I don't have much hope for it, I'm not going to lie.
But... You're not a big biopic fan though, are you?
No.
Right, well, link to that is in the show notes. If you would like to pause and watch along, please do so. And we will see you back after the sparkles. What did you think to that?
Standard biopic. Drivel.
Oh. Strong words.
I don't really get them. Like, so many of these stories, whilst they are unique to the person that we're seeing, so many of these stories are so similar. It's a rise to fame.
Yeah.
We all love them.
Yeah.
And then they all come crumbling down and they die. So it's like, I don't know. I'd much prefer them when they're a bit more creative and outside of the box, like Rocket Man was.
The thing about Rocket Man, though, is that Elton John had a lot of say in how it became.
Yeah, but I think that could have... Whilst Elton John is an incredibly creative person, that could have backfired because
Elton John
might have wanted to just tell his story, where I thought the creative nuances of how they told the story is what made it interesting. Like,
yeah.
Some of the songs were, like, in this fantastical world that weren't real. Like, this just looks... We're going to tell Amy's story in a way that we know.
I think if Elton John hadn't had a say in Rocket Man, it wouldn't have had any of that fantastical element to it. It would have just been another biopic.
Do you think?
Because his whole, like, thing is being weird, wacky and wonderful. So he wanted to make sure that Weird, Wacky and Wonderful was in there. And Amy Winehouse's thing was making music because she was a brilliant songwriter and didn't know what else she would do.
She was chewed up and spat out, wasn't she? I always remember once they were like, she was on OK magazine cover when she was taking drugs, and they were like, people saying, oh, look at her feet, you can see she's been injecting between her toes. I just think the way, and I would say it's improved slightly about our views of people who are addicted to things, but I just think, I always remember just the way she was trapped was horrible.
I am a relatively good fan of Amy Winehouse's music, and I absolutely love what I know about Amy Winehouse, the human person, and I absolutely hate how she was treated by the media and the music industry. So I think I'll probably watch this and cry because I know about it, but I don't know if I'm necessarily expecting the best film.
Yeah, I would say that's fair. I don't really know the actor playing Amy Winehouse herself, Marissa Abela. She's in HBO/BBC2's Industry, but I've not watched that. But it was interesting. I thought Jack O'Connell from Skins is a phenomenal casting for Blake. I think he looks quite like him. And it was nice to see Leslie Manville in there, but we'll see how much of a role she plays as, I'm presuming, her mum? Cynthia Winehouse?
I don't know.
So, yeah, I mean, unfortunately, I'm going to call this one trash.
I'm going to trash the trailer because I don't think it was a particularly good trailer. But I think I'm interested to see the film.
Yeah.
Personally.
Out in the UK in April. So not Lovely. Too long to wait.
Not too long to wait. Well, now for this week's headline feature. It's Good Grief, coming up after this quick break.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Good grief, then.
Good grief.
Good grief. Would you like to, before we dive in, give us a synopsis?
Yes. How about I do that?
Yeah.
Okay. So, Mark's husband dies in a car crash just before Christmas. As his friends, Sophie and Thomas, help him process his grief, he is challenged by revelations about his late husband. The three mark the first year anniversary of Oliver's death with a blowout trip to Paris, where they help each other to confront their demons.
Yeah, quite a good one.
Thanks.
What did you think of the film?
I think that it's a very moving tale. It'll make you cry. Definitely feel things. I always feel like that about like films about grief, though.
That's interesting you say that, because I've got a slightly I think I've got a slightly different perspective from the film. The emotional side of it, for me, wasn't necessarily the grief. It was more about the friendship. Yeah. It wasn't the actual grief itself.
Well, no, I think because, the first event that happens is the loss, you don't really see the relationship. Like, so you don't feel the grief until later anyway. But,
Yeah. What other notes have you got then? You know, so, I'm going to really pull the curtain back here. We're only recording a headline feature ahead of us going on holiday, and Ned can't seem to get around the fact that we've just doing one part of the podcast.
Right, so...
So let's just...
I've just read my full sentence. Yeah, so
Come on, let's do it.
I've arrived. Right, so the reason that I think, like, films about grief and loss, like... pull on my heartstrings, other than like the fact that I am a human with feelings, is that like I always think it's like a reminder that you should say what you need to say to people who are important to you, because one day
you won't be able to,
whether it's you or them that dies.
Yes.
And I think that this was a really good way to tell that story. I saw an interview with Dan, is it Levy or Levy?
I think people say Levy. Yeah.
Anyway, saw an interview with him, and apparently this was kind of his way of processing the loss of his grandma and his dog in quite quick succession. So he made this film about it, and it helped.
Right. I feel like that's a bit of a PR stretch.
Do you think?
Well... this film covers more.
It's very cynical of you.
Well, I am probably being a bit cynical because it's got absolute... I know grief is grief, but this kind of grief where he's grieving his husband, who he then finds out was having an affair behind his back before... didn't get to find that out before he died from him.
Yeah.
It's totally different to losing your grandma and your dog.
I mean... he's not going to tell it as it happens.
No, he? I know. But sometimes I just think in Hollywood, just say, I wanted to explore grief. We've all been through it.
Yeah.
Doesn't remind me of losing my grandma and my
dog. Right, fine.
But, so Dan Levy then.
Yeah.
What did you think from a director / screenwriter perspective?
I think did you say it's his debut?
It's his
directorial film debut.
He did direct and write quite a bit of Schitt's Creek at times.
I think I knew that.
Throughout its run.
So I think as his like first feature, I like the final result generally. There were odd little tiny little bits in the script that sort of pulled me out at moments. But really, I think, to be honest, that's probably just like nitpicky.
This is where I think screenwriting... In a film that's about a drama, where it's like real people, it's not genre, it's literally just people hanging out.
It's just a story, yeah.
This is where I think potentially those are the hardest type of screen... like scripts to write, because you've got to really embody, like, would a human being in this situation say this line?
Yeah.
And there was a few points where I thought, I don't think people would say that in, like, to their friends. Yeah. Which I understand is a really hard balance, because if you put me in a room with some of my best friends, if you were watching it as a film, you'd probably be like, they're not even saying anything to each other. It's all just like silly things, or like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's
so
bespoke to who you are as a group.
Yeah,
but I would definitely say from a directing point of view, he seems a lot more confident in directing than I would say the screenplays.
Yes, I think I'd agree with that. I think that's probably what.
And
I
this is
at.
Like 100% a streaming film,
definitely.
Which I don't like always to say, because I feel that. At one point, we would have gone to see any film at the cinema. It didn't really matter Unless it was like a direct-to-DVD type.
I think if this went out in the cinema, we'd have seen it at the cinema.
Yeah, probably. But from a commercial perspective, this is a perfectly fine streaming film for me.
I mean, a lot of worse films get into the cinemas.
They do. I liked his acting in it as well. I think he's quite a nice, he's quite a wholesome
I quite like his actor. Kind of acting style, because even though his characters are always different, he's always quite him in it, I think.
That was gonna be something I potentially highlighted as a bit of a negative. Fine. I think you get Dan Levy in quite a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Which I think must be quite hard when you... So what have we seen him in? Seen him in Schitt's Creek, seen him in Sex Education.
And this.
And they're all quite similar.
Yeah.
Really enjoyed Ruth Negga's performance as Sophie. I liked that full... The camaraderie between the three best friends.
I love
as well.
That. They're kind of dynamic.
Hamish Patel as Thomas as well. I thought they were really fun.
Their dynamic was fun because you had like Dan Levy as the like supportive but a little bit lost one. You had Ruth Negga as the chaotic but like deeply compassionate one.
Yeah.
And then what's his name? Hamish.
Hamish Patel as Thomas.
Hamish Patel. Yeah. Grounded but quite insecure, so can like get a bit stressed out sometimes, and I think the three of them really balanced off each other quite well and complemented the story together. Like I liked the way they'd been written together.
I did quite like the how old they were.
Yeah, like mid to late 30s.
Yeah, I thought that kind of age that you must be at, we can all be at very different points of our lives. And I think especially when you live in a big city like this is set in London.
Yeah.
There's so much going on. Right, one of my best friends, Emily, she always says to me, we always get to the same point that we mostly want to. Point, but like
times.
In London, I always think people are like really all over the place in different points of their life, depending on when you've gone there.
Yeah,
but I thought it was quite an interesting age for them to explore losing your husband in your late 30s as well, but also kind of Sophie not being able to settle down properly and commit to a kind of serious relationship with Terrence.
Thomas, and like, not this really... Terrence guy and her have been together for ages,
like on and off.
Like he's part of their friendship group as her plus one. But like very much friends with Mark and Thomas, and she still can't really commit to him.
And like Thomas to me, it's like he's obviously late 30s, he's gay, dating in your late 30s is perceived to be quite a challenge, because once you're over 30, you know me, as a gay man, there's all that stuff about nobody wants you, all that kind of stuff. But then he does find a boyfriend, which is nice. I can't imagine the grief. I can't imagine how alone you must feel losing a husband at that age. Like, I'm sure it's the same as any age, but you literally just had it. They looked like they were in the prime of their lives. And yes, we find out that Oliver was seeing somebody else, but it didn't necessarily sound like they couldn't have worked through that either.
Well,
because Oliver did ask for an open marriage.
I was going to say, they'd agreed to an open marriage.
But I feel like they could have worked through it.
Yeah.
Even if Mark had kind of said, I'm actually not that into it.
Yeah.
Just that level. Like, did he say he was an orphan as well? He doesn't have any parents. He's like, I'm a widow and now I'm an orphan. No, I was an orphan and now I'm also a widow. I was just like, I can't imagine how lonely you must feel in the world when, like...
Mm.
Everyone's gone and to lean on your best friends.
Yeah.
And friends is different, isn't it? It's like, it made me think, and this is sounding like I'm going to give it a way higher star rating than I actually am going to give it, but it made me think of like some of my best friends and how we're all going to go through tough times as we get older with families and relatives passing away and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So it all like comes to a head, doesn't it? It's like, Thomas No, Mark has met somebody, this guy called Theo, who took him off to the Louvre. I never know how to say that. The Louvre? Louvre.
Yeah.
Louvre. And
I don't know why you're having difficulty.
Sophie and Thomas kind of lose him. Sophie gets really drunk. She's found at a bus station. Thomas kind of really berates Mark, and like the whole friendship kind of comes to a head. And then in walks the guy that Oliver was seeing, which kind of gives quite a bit of comedic relief. But we did say there was a few plot holes here. It's like, I've got nowhere to stay. I thought,
get yourself an Airbnb.
This looks like it's set in modern times. Just go stay somewhere else. You don't have to be in this flat. But I did think, from a storytelling perspective, it was quite fun that he was there, because
yeah, it was funny.
It was like, I'm not really, I am angry at you, but you haven't really done anything wrong.
Yeah.
And now the person that we both knew is dead anyway, so yeah. And I like that scene where he goes to hug Dan Levy's character, and he's like, I think a hug's
I don't think we're there yet.
Too far. But I do like the silly bit.
Yeah.
On the carousel, on the wheel.
Yeah.
Where they're like fixing the friendship. And I like the bit where it's saying, like, when you try to be serious with your friends about something, then you go quiet and it's like, I can't be silly. I can't be serious when we're on a wheel, the Ferris wheel in Paris. Like, I'm not doing this here.
Yeah.
So you said you had loads of notes. Where are you?
I don't know. I've kind of lost the plot with them. a lot of them are quite similar, so it turns out we've kind of covered it.
But I think it's quite a simple fit. There's not really much to get into.
It's not groundbreaking by any means, but it is a warm, quite cozy film, I think. I like some of Sophie's like advice bombs. Like at some point quite early on, she's like, come on, dude, we've made this nest for you for a whole year. It's time for you to like put your big boy pants on.
And we've been sitting on you. We've been sitting on you for a year.
And she's got cute little Northern Irish accent.
Was it Northern?
I think so.
Oh. And we've been sitting on you for a year.
That wasn't Northern Irish.
And they need to fly.
I
quite like that, but that was in the trailer.
It was. It's nice. I thought the score was actually really lovely.
I didn't really notice it.
Well, I didn't really notice it the first time, but I noticed more the second time I watched it, because I've watched it twice.
Yeah, because the first time we watched it, we had friends around and we were having chats.
A little bit chatty.
Yeah.
But it was really nice, actually. Very the right mood at every point. And that's all I have to say on that one.
I will say, to me, and whilst the three characters seem to be having very different lived experiences, and it looks that Mark has married quite rich, all of them live a pretty cushy London life, I would say.
Oh, they're very much on the better end.
Yeah, like even some of the things they go to, so they go, like, they're all involved in, like, modern art.
Yeah.
And there's a good couple of cameos in this, actually, so Emma Corrin plays this young performance artist in one of these galleries. And I was reading that they're wearing a dress that she... Sorry, that I don't know the gender of the character. I just know that Emma Corrin's non-binary, so watch me.
Go for it. Go for it.
So, but they're knitting the clothes
as
the audience are pulling the clothes apart.
Yeah, because...
And it's like this wanky...
They're doing like a weird, like... moaning, whinging, screaming thing.
Yeah, like weird.
And then they walk over to to Mark and give him the end of the yarn. And then he says something about how they'll wake up tomorrow a bit embarrassed. And they're like, dick. And then he's unraveling the dress.
So that was one cameo. And I wonder, is like, are these Dan Levy's friends? Because it looks like, oh, I've just pulled in a couple of
people
that I know. And then we've got Caitlin Dever, who plays, like, so basically, Oliver, Mark's husband, was an author, and all of his books get adapted into like either TV or films.
Mm.
And Caitlin Dever seems to play an actor that has been in one of the films. And she gets up and does the camp ode to eulogy to him at Oliver's funeral.
Do you know, I thought actually, that was quite funny. That eulogy was possibly my least favourite part of the film.
The full film?
Yeah. I didn't like it. It really... It was a weird tone. It didn't... It wasn't quite funny enough for me to laugh
at. No, I'm guessing I liked the cameos. No, I get what you mean. I just liked seeing some cool little cameos. But I do think him probably... That side of Oliver.
Yeah.
We didn't really know.
No.
So, like, you see this person doing this over the top. I've been in your films, but we didn't really know much about this.
Yeah.
Other than that his books got adapted.
Yeah.
I like David Bradley, but I did think it was a weird casting.
I don't think it was a weird cast.
I don't know.
I thought he did a really good job, actually. He didn't look like he
could be Luke Evans' dad.
Well, don't really have to. No. He's really old.
Yeah.
My favourite non-main character was Celia Imrie as Imelda, the wealth manager.
Oh, she was funny.
She was really lovely. Definitely the kind of the wise owl in the story.
And her, I felt like her scenes like anchored it. So we'd move.
They really gave you kind of,
oh, that's where we're at, right?
Points but, yeah. in the story. And she did a great job.
She's a lesbian as well.
And she did a little lesbian reveal at the end, which is very cute. So that was fun. Do you know, overall, I think with this film, it starts and obviously it's just before Christmas and they're all at a Christmas party. And when we put it on, we were like, oh, is this going to be a Christmas film? And I don't think it is. It's definitely a wintry film, but I don't think it's a Christmas film. And because it's kind of peppered with humour as well, even though it deals with kind of grief and loss, it's by no means a depressing watch. So you don't have to like worry too much.
No, it's about, not like...
Like, I wouldn't say steer clear of this if you're having a bad day.
Yeah, like, I did get a little... I did get a bit teary-eyed, but it wasn't like, oh, my God.
It was,
God,
like, it nice sent me tears, into, though. Like,
a deep, dark depression. It's not
it's
like
not
that.
A depressing film at all.
No.
It was... I think, in general, it was the perfect level of kind of laughing at hardship. Do you know what I mean? Like, make light of serious situations so that we can get through them. Sort of thing. And this film was quite nice for that.
And I like that, and also like the kind of all end in a much nicer place to where they were as well. So it's not like you're like, oh, that was a really sad ending. Like, Mark returns to London, sells the shared house, takes up painting, which is a hobby that he'd done but had kind of lost during his marriage to...
I'm glad.
He almost sounds like he'd lost a bit of who he was during that marriage as well.
Yeah. I think so, because he didn't quite.
Like, it was like, I used to illustrate his books, but I don't even do that anymore. Yeah. And so, like, he did that. Sophie gets back with Terrence and is engaged.
Yeah, finally commits.
Thomas also meets his new boyfriend, Mark, that looks a bit like you.
Everyone says it, apparently.
I
really liked the choice for Mark to end up single.
So do I.
And not with Theo, who he goes on that date
with. Thought Theo was nice. For him to meet Theo in Paris was quite a nice thing to have done.
It was. I liked Theo as a character.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that they didn't.
And quite a nice thing for us to have seen as well. Like, oh, he can process it. But I can't. I mean, it's only a year after his husband died. I can't imagine what it must be like going out on dates and stuff after that.
No, no. How
but
weird.
I think he played it quite well. I think Theo was. It's almost like if you wanted to write a character that you could meet whilst you're in the grief process, that to try and help you get over your ex who died on you, it's like you'd write Theo.
Yeah.
He's very understanding. I don't think every person would be like that.
Yeah. I also think, like, the way that the timeline works in this film is really interesting, because our first year is pretty much...
You don't really see
the first year at all, other than he finds out that Oliver rented a flat in Paris without telling him. And he reads Oliver's Christmas card and finds out that Oliver had met somebody and wanted to explore it a bit.
And so, like, no disrespect to the guy that he'd
really concentrated.
Met. Oh yeah, sorry.
On that,
yeah.
Like the later end of the year.
And no disrespect to the guy that he met, but he didn't look like he had a lot going for him.
A dancer from Berlin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But apparently, like, a lot is said about Oliver, the character. We don't really get to be around him a lot, but they look like they had a nice relationship in ways.
Yeah.
But a lot is said in this film about everybody finds him inherently charming and all that kind of stuff. Like,
yeah, nobody's got a bad word to say about him.
He may be a bit of a flirt, but, yeah.
Oh.
I think that's me pretty much done.
Honestly, same.
Yeah. Star rating?
I think I go 3.5. And thinking on it, I wonder if I may be slightly skewed, positively skewed, just based on the, like, subject matter. Because I always think films that make me feel tend to get an extra half a star than they might.
Well, you stick by that, King.
I do. Yeah. I just mean, when I'm looking at some of the other films, I give 3.5 stars.
It's hard, even
some
with,
of them are better,
like,
than this.
But
some
with different genres, though.
I know.
It's really hard. It's like, what's a 3.5 hour? No, what's a 3.5 horror film compared to this? It's like,
exactly,
a bit difficult.
Exactly.
And I went with three. Thanks for asking.
I was about to ask you, actually.
But for now, let's unsheath the Gaydar. It's a wonderful piece of machinery devised by Ned's own hand, and we use it to rank all the films and TV we discuss based on their LGBTQ+ appeal. Let's see where the Gaydar ranks. Good grief!
That's really silly. Good grief. Honestly. I've just added numbers to the Gaydar ranking, so we've got 32 films on there so far.
There's no TV in there?
I mean, we've got 32 positions on the Gaydar.
Oh, my God.
Don't even know that many positions.
Stop it.
Good Grief is coming in above Barbie.
Yeah.
But below Red, White and Royal Blue.
Definitely above Barbie. Because it's not just a bit camp and cut queer-coded. Obviously, we've got queer characters. What's above Red, White and Royal Blue?
Passages.
I'd go between those two, personally. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
I think when we get to...
I think Red, White and Royal Blue was... And whilst this film was quite simple in its premise, I would say Red, White and Royal Blue was a bit 2D. When it comes to queer perspective, it was quite hammy and basically.
Like, yeah, didn't really explore much.
Yeah, whereas at least this had two gay characters who both had very different lived experiences.
Yeah.
And it actually explored a bit about queer identity.
Relationships.
You know, there's more openness, in particular about open relationships within gay communities. I'm not saying it doesn't happen amongst other people, but there's a lot more.
I think
openly spoken about, isn't it?
I'm not aware of any of my straight friends that have open relationships,
no.
Or that know people, no straight people in open relationships.
Yeah,
but I know lots of gay people in open relationships.
Yes,
exactly. Or that know people in open relationships.
Yeah, so
there's a little.
I quite like, so I definitely,
window into
I,
our
would,
world.
I would disagree on the Gaydar. I would put it above Red, White and Royal.
So right, all of this exercise is about calibrating the Gaydar.
And it's just about talking about LGBTQ+ appeal, which this film very much has. There's only pretty much the G out of the LGBTQ+, I think.
Yeah.
But it's a good gay story.
Yeah.
And I guess Dan Levy's writing what he knows.
Yeah. And... Emma Corrin cast member.
I mean, very, you know.
I know, but still there.
Yeah. That's not, is that everything?
A raise. Yes.
Well, and that's all for this time. If you have enjoyed this episode of Gaze on Film, please subscribe, rate and comment on your podcasting platform of choice. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Gaze on Film Pod and check out our Letterboxd accounts, links of which are in the show notes. We'd love to hear your thoughts, so please do feel free to drop us a message. Did you like this film? Where would you have rated it? All that kind of stuff. I have been Declan.
And I have been Ned.
And this has been Gaze on Film. Thanks for listening.
Bye. Bye.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.